I've long thought they're one of the most beautiful stories about Jesus' interaction with his disciples is a story about the time when he washed his disciples' feet. It's agape love here. Love which is not emotional, but love which is sacrificial, and love which is of the will, love which is very deliberate. It's a story of love that gives when it's tough to give, when it's humiliating to give, and when it's very necessary to give. And yet it's love that receives so little in return from these guys. John, the gospel writer, let us know that this washing of the feet happened on that terrible night when Jesus was betrayed by a close friend, and then was arrested, then he was beaten, then he was lied about, and then the very next day, he was crucified. And he begins his account by telling us that Jesus, knowing that the time had come for him to return to the Father, and having loved his own right through the time that he'd been with them, he now showed the full extent of his love. How? By washing their feet. And that's why I call this a love story. Now, of course, his act of love was much more than just washing their feet. That verse can be translated as Jesus loved them to the uttermost, to the extent of love. And it's a reference to his death. Indeed, if you read the story of the washing of the feet, you can see again and again these little references to the fact that he would die for them, that they would be made clean by what he did for them. And that death that followed was a death that washes the believer in Jesus Christ of all the wrongdoings that stand between us and God through Christ's death upon the cross. But it's also clear from the story that his expression of love for those disciples in that room included serving them by washing their feet. Even the feet of Judas, who betrayed him. Even the feet of Peter, who made such a fuss about the whole thing. And that act of washing the disciples' feet in that society was the most menial act of all. Some writers say that often in a Jewish home, you wouldn't have a Jewish slave do it. You'd have a Gentile slave do it. And yet Jesus washed the disciples' feet. And he gave it to them as an example of what they who believed on him were now responsible to do for one another. And this act of washing their feet was made even more memorable because of the way he did it. Just think of what the Bible tells us in John 13, this verse. Jesus got up from the meal. The meal had already started. He got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped about him. And we need to realize that this was an age when the clothing you wore had great significance. A rabbi was recognized by the clothes, not necessarily that they were so different, but the way he wore, and particularly the headdress. And was recognized as much by the clothes he wore as a soldier was by the uniform that he wore, or a prophet by the rough attire he wore, or a beggar by the cloak he had, or a slave by his apron. And here Jesus gets up and deliberately puts off his outer garments in order to wrap around his waist just like a slave's apron, this long towel that was wrapped around with a long piece hanging. And he washed the disciples' feet, and then, just as a slave would, he took the long piece that was hanging and he wiped them dry. Jesus wanted them to have no doubt, did he, about the position he took for them. He became, in dress and in manner, their slave in order to serve them. And in serving them, he missed nobody. Not one. He washed all their feet. Although he had good reason for missing at least one out, if not more. But then the interesting thing to notice is verse 12. Verse 12 tells us that he once again then deliberately put on his outer robes. And he deliberately went and sat down, and it tells us this, at the head, in the position of authority. And from that place of authority, he turned out his disciples and he gave them a command. And it's a command that applies to everyone who would ever follow Jesus. This is what he said. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Now remember, in the Greek and also in the Hebrew, the words are always very definite. If words are in a particular order, they're in an order for a reason. And if the order is changed, it's changed for a reason. Now those disciples had begun their journey with Jesus some 3-4 years before. And when they began that journey, they began by addressing him as teacher, rabbi. You go to the book of John earlier on, remember John the Baptist? He pointed his disciples, Andrew and John, to follow Jesus, and they went to Jesus and they said to him, rabbi, where do you stay? Or teacher. And that's the way. So from the very beginning, they addressed him as rabbi or teacher. But as they walked along with him over those years, and they saw what he did, they heard his words. They heard the way he said things. And the way he put things. And they saw the miracles he did, even raising people from the dead. And they soon began to realize that he was somewhat more special than just a teacher. In fact, a lot more special than a teacher. So they began to call him Lord. The word Lord, at the very least, means master. But it also has the undertones of divinity, especially when the disciples use that. And later on, of course, you might remember after the resurrection with Thomas, who wasn't there at first when Jesus came alive, but then saw him after. Remember what he said, his first words to him? My Lord and my God. And Jesus turns to his disciples and said, these are the words you use for me. You call me Lord, or you call me master or teacher and Lord. And rightly so, for such I am. But then Jesus turns the order around. Notice that. And says, now I, your Lord and teacher. I have washed your feet. What a difference by just putting Lord there, isn't it? But not only have I washed your feet, says Jesus, as your Lord, but I have given to you a responsibility. A responsibility that is more than just words. Words like Lord and teacher can be quite easy to say. This is more than just words. I've given you something that you must now do for one another, because I have done it for you. And that responsibility is service of the very lowest order for the sake of your brother and sister in me, in Christ, and for the sake of my kingdom, and the sake of me. And then it's interesting that as Jesus realizes that this responsibility it's got to be emphasized because we forget it so easy, don't we? And we move into just words rather than actions. He goes on to say it again. And in the next verse, 15 to 17, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth. No servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. A promise of blessing. You know, it was so obvious to those disciples that Jesus was master. You couldn't miss it. You walked to that room, you wouldn't have to ask, well, who's the boss here? You saw him. It was obvious. The way he was dressed, the way his manner, everything about him. It was obvious that Jesus was the master and that they were the followers. They were the servants. And yet, he was the one who had knelt before each of them and washed their feet. As an example of them, to them, of what he expected of them. And you know what? The same stands true for us. It hasn't been revoked. Jesus left his place in glory. We've been singing about that. Servant King. He humbled himself and became a man. And he did that for us. And he offered the most sacrificial act of all. And he did it for us. And therefore, we have no right to hold back from any service that he calls us to do for others, even ones we don't like. And to do it in his name. However lowly, however sacrificial that service may be, as long as it's the Lord who calls us to do it. And this particularly applies, as it did for those disciples, to the service for and with other Christians. Service that facilitates the worship of God and the ministry to others done in his name that extends the kingdom. Back in the time of Jesus, they of course had the big temple plus synagogues. In the temple, they had a whole group of people who were set apart to do the work. They were there to make sure that worship could happen in the temple. They were called Levites. They were of a tribe of Jacob. And many of them, that was their task in life. They were given ability to live through what they did. But that was their task. And they were there to facilitate worship. But when the early church started, they started meeting in different places, in homes, in the porch of Solomon's temple at times, in other places. They didn't have any Levites there. They didn't have a group who was commissioned just to do that. So what happened? They all had to pitch in and help. They all were involved in helping making worship happen. Everyone willingly doing their part. And it was also very quickly obvious that it was the same with the ministries of loving and caring that became the channels by which the gospel of Jesus reached out into the community. Everyone had to do it. And it also made the community of believers a family, because everybody was involved. That attracted others to be part of it. And surely nothing much has changed, has it, over the years? That's what church is all about today. Oh, we do have paid church staff. I happen to be here. But that is to support the service of everybody, not replace it. The responsibility of all working together as servants to make our worship honouring to God. To make our evangelism happen. To make our care of one another and our community take place. And it belongs to us all. And it needs more than words to fulfill it. It needs more than saying, I serve the Lord, to make it happen. You've actually got to do it. And you've got to be involved. Last Sunday, in the daily devotional Bread of Life, there was a story. It's a story of a man who visited the campus of an American university on an extremely cold winter's day. And he saw two men chipping away the thick ice from the pavement around by the students' quarters. Now, it's obvious that that was very important to do. It was a dangerous situation. The ice had to be chipped away. And he went and saw these two men. He thought to himself, they must be the new students, you know? They've only just come. And they've been sent out to do the job. They're the bottom of the pile. And so he said something to them about, you didn't sign up for this, did you? And they turned to him and said, well, actually, we did. I'm the president of the student body, and this is the vice president. And the guy was very encouraged by that. And he saw it as an example of what Jesus said here, of leaders serving. And I looked at that and I thought, yeah, it does that. But you know, my response was a little bit different. My response was, where were the others? Why were there only two of them out there? When the work was obviously extensive and the benefit was for everybody. You know, the cry, where are all the others, is heard often in churches. When it comes to filling rosters, when it comes to allotting tasks, when it comes to prayer meetings, when it comes to the giving, when it comes to using the outreach opportunities. And the funniest thing, as someone told me this just last week, is heard as much in large churches as it is in small churches. In fact, sometimes it's heard more in large churches than in small churches. But thankfully, as we often see here, and I'm so pleased about that, it doesn't take much to change it, does it? Just for us all, pastor, setting the example, and people, to see again Jesus on his knees washing our feet. Vivid picture. Calling us to accept the responsibility of whatever service for one another and him is needed. And to meet the responsibility with more than just our words, but with our action. That's why this commission service, though we have the deacons and the elders out here, is not just for a few. In fact, everybody should be out here. And at times we've made everybody stand up, because we are all involved. It is not just for a few, but for all, as we commit ourselves to worshipping God, to working together for the sake of God's glory and for the sake of God's kingdom. Here in Craigie and beyond.